play the music.
And we're back on the Pizza Podcast. Today, I'm really fucking excited. We got a super special guest. We got Stephanie Swan from Modernist Cuisine. I'm going nuts over here. Stephanie is a publisher and the editorial director, cat juggler, fire extinguisher, ghostbuster. You do so much, and I mean, your books have, like, the Modernist books have really changed my professional life, and I am so excited that you guys are coming out with the pizza. Thanks for coming on. What's going on? How are you?
Thanks, Nino. It's awesome to be here. Always good to see you.
We just saw each other recently.
We did.
You came over for the, we had like a little pizza thing going on, you know, cooking pizza out in the front yard in the BK.
Because I can't just see you once. I got to see you twice.
I know.
If not three times.
That's how it has to go. I'm going to follow you around after this. We're going to go hit the town. I know we're a little short on time, but let's like jump in. Tell me about Modernist Pizza. What the fuck is it? What should everybody know? You know what I mean? Is this the definitive pizza book? Is this what everybody pizza guy needs?
Well, not just pizza guys. Pizza girls, too.
Pizza girls,
just
too.
Just be careful about that.
I know. Women and pizza.
You have a very famous pizza lady.
Pizza people.
Pizza humans.
We got the women and pizza, bro.
I know.
The women and pizza.
It's
a lot
amazing.
Of women getting into pizza.
It's basically, hopefully, everything you want to know about pizza, and then some in 3+ volumes. So about 1,400 pages. Going from the history of pizza to techniques, equipment, ingredients, and then amazing recipes.
Awesome. So where did this project start? Like, how long have you guys been at this pizza thing?
So technically, we've been working on the project for 4 years. But when we worked on Modernist Bread about 7+ years ago, we started looking at the flatbread category and thought about pizza in general. And the more we discovered about pizza, the more that we thought, hey, you know what? This is gonna be an awesome new book. So we limited the amount of work we did on pizza for bread, but continued to do the research on pizza the whole time. So when we say 4 years working on pizza, that was the whole team working on pizza. But obviously there was some preliminary work done, you know, years in advance of that.
Right, yeah, because with the bread book, you obviously got into it somewhat. So did you guys, what goes on at Modernist when you're gearing up to another thing? Are you just like, okay, now we got to order ovens and go down a crazy pizza path? Like, what was...
Yeah, I mean, it's basically we're starting to look at other things that people have written. So Nathan Mirvold, who is our founder, who is my boss, and our chef, Francisco Migoya, who's been on the show, the three of us kind of go into separate paths of starting to think about what this project is going to be. Obviously, you know, Nathan looks at it from an overall perspective of outlines development and what we think is going to be the best things that we want to cover within the book, while chef Francisco works on the recipe development and looks at ingredients. But in the beginning, you know, we're reading a lot of books and we're going to places like Pizza Expo,
right,
to kind of look at what's out there, who's out there and what's out there and why are they out there. So it could be like checking out ovens for Modernist Pizza. When we switched out for Modernist Bread, we obviously had to get some pizza ovens.
Mm-hmm.
So we met with a lot of pizza oven manufacturers, and kind of decided, like, here are the ones that we think will be great for us to work with and use for the 4+ time that we're going to be working on this. And then it's mixers too. You know, we pride ourselves in making all of our recipes in a variety of different ways. And so that calls for us using, you know, all the types of mixers that everyone thinks pizzolos use throughout the world, and then also ovens. So, you know, we try and get a wood fire. We've got a wood fire that's also a gas assist oven.
Mm-hmm.
We had some electric ovens. We have a convection oven. We have a home oven, you know, every variety that we could think of that we needed just for the pizza book. So the bread ovens also, like we have a Mive, a beautiful bread deck oven that we also tried, you know, making pizza in.
Right. How did that come out?
Good. I mean, it's there's so many different styles of pizza. So that's one of the things with this book is that we cover all the styles. And every oven has a plus or minus for different types of styles. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily make a Detroit-style pizza in a wood-fired Neapolitan oven.
Sure.
I mean, there's reasons for why you make a certain style in a certain oven. But, you know, we want to try that and experiment and make sure that we're offering the best information as we can.
So did you guys go out to Italy? I know you were in New York. I know you came and visited me at one point. But, like, what were the did you guys travel a lot for this? What was going on with that?
I think overall we racked up about 100,000 miles.
Jesus Christ.
Between planes, trains, and automobiles. We did it all. And, of course, walking. But we spent a lot of time in a variety of countries. So we went to Naples and then all over Italy. Our first trip to Italy was to Naples. We went back there a couple times. But then we decided that we really wanted to see what pizza was like in Florence, in Arezzo, in Venice. And it was very eye-opening about the pizza experience in a variety of places just within that one country. But then we went as far as Tokyo.
Yeah.
We spent time here. We ended up, for this particular project, we found that travel was going to be more encompassing than any other project that we've been on, or any other journey, I should say, that we've been on. So we hit over 250 pizzerias that we talk about in the book. But then I would say we probably hit another 250 just on the research side of, like, where to go, you know, just talking to you on Friday and then today too, you know, we're rattling off all these other pizzerias that are new that opened up that weren't during our journey during that time. So, you know, it's consistently evolving. But yeah, it was great to go and actually meet like you, like going to your pizzeria, checking out how you make your dough and your ingredients and your ovens and your mixer and your process. And then, of course, eating the pizza.
Right. No, for sure. So actually, it's been like kind of an interesting topic I've been getting into, where like the Italian side of pizza. So obviously, like, there's been pizzerias in Naples for a very long time. But from the research I've been doing, it seems like pizzerias around Italy are kind of newer, you know what I mean? Like post-World War II, just because...
Outside of Campania,
it seems to be like a lot of post-World War II. I know there's a place in Milan that was opened up by Sicilian immigrants in the 1950s, but I was looking into Roman-style pizza. It seems to be like only since the 60s something like that.
Maybe even later than that. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, pizza, I mean, we talk about the history of pizza in a variety of dynamics within the book. And it was really interesting because there's kind of like this black hole for pizza knowledge that basically ends around the wars and then pops back up around the 60s, maybe 58. But like that period of time, pizza wasn't captured. There might have been pizzerias. I'm sure there were people making pizza.
Right.
But it wasn't a focus of anyone, you know, from the States to South America to Europe and Italy. So it's really interesting how there are these pizzerias, you know, in Naples that have been around maybe for generations. But like trying to find the actual documents that exist on when those pizzerias opened and how long they've been, you know, working as a pizzeria,
right?
You know, it's a lot of information to dig, and especially when you don't speak Italian. We hired a lot of people that did amazing jobs doing research for us, like in Sao Paulo and Portuguese language speaking researchers, and then people in Italy that were going to the biblioteca for us and tracking down information there. And then here in New York, too. I mean, I had an amazing researcher that was going to the city looking at archival information for building rights and ovens, because back then you had to basically let people know where your oven is so they're tracked. But those are even missing, you know, so it's right. A lot of information to try and track down.
What were some of the experiences in Italy that kind of stand out while you were there?
So I went to this one place. So one of the really interesting things is we found this book, which not anyone really in the pizza industry had led us on. And we actually tracked it down when we were in Italy. It was called the Gambero Rosso Pizza Guide. So it's a pizzeria guide. And it's been coming out since like the 90s. I want to say like 97 was the first edition. And it was pizzerias exclusively throughout Italy. And then in the back section, they have some places in other parts of the world. But it was really interesting because they graded them by slice. It's like Tre Spiki is the top.
Okay.
And so one of the things when we first went, we were like, oh, you know what? Like, let's try and find, let's try and go to all the three pizza slice places. Like, it's like stars. And then they have a rotelle for the wheel.
Okay.
For anything that's not sliced, so, you know, like Bonci and El Taglio style. So we went on to go to all of the Tre Spikis, and some of them we knew, and a lot of them we didn't know. And a lot of the ones that we didn't know, also a lot of people, when I asked them, like, have you been to X? They were like, no, never heard of it.
Right.
And it was really interesting, like, going outside of Campania, outside of Naples, where there were amazing pizzolos and pizzolas. One woman that I went to have her pizza, she's right at the base of Mount Vesuvius, like literally on the Naples Campania line.
Right.
It's called Via Giovanna. And everyone, until this day still, like I'm like, oh, have you ever been there? And everyone's like, no, never heard of it. And amazing pizza. She's the only female Tre Spiki pizzola that's been in the Gambero Rosso guide that since I've started looking and doing research. So 97 to now, she's been in there, I think 3 years now in a row. And it's an Italian restaurant, gorgeous spot, amazing pizza. She uses a lot of different flours, cereals, as they would call them there. And then, you know, just amazing local Italian tomatoes and toppings. But I find it fascinating that, like, no one knew her.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely live in a world where it's, you know, marketing is such a huge thing. And, like, you know, now you have all this social media, but, like, before that, like, if you don't hire, like, a PR agent that's going to really push you out to the things, like, how is anybody going to really know about you? What was it? Wood-fired pizza? Was it?
Yeah, it was traditional Neapolitan, okay. I would say. And, you know, the ingredients were Neapolitan. Nothing. I would say the big difference was her inclusion of cereals.
Okay.
You know, different types of flours, which is not really something that many pizzolos do in Italy, especially in the Naples Campania region.
Well, yeah, it was really up until recently. Now everything's changing. It was like kind of like against the rules.
Well,
it was
Cracco,
like blasphemy.
You know, Cracco in Milan, he did a whole wheat Neapolitan pizza.
Right.
And he got the shit for it. I mean, people were so pissed at him. And there was, like, you know, all these articles in Italy about his blasphemy of pizza. And it was about the same time as the UNESCO granted the Neapolitan pizza. And I actually went to this panel where Cracco was on it, and then the guy from UNESCO was there, and actually Enzo Coccia, he was there, and a variety of like key people in the UNESCO side. And it was just really interesting to see this dynamic of people, Italians, north and south still, arguing about the authenticity of pizza.
Yeah, it's all kind of ridiculous. And I think, I mean, I completely attribute it to you know, everybody having supercomputers in their pockets, where it's like, you know, I mean, look at the Tipo 1 flour that they came out with. The reason why they can't, Caputo came out with Type 1 flour is because all of a sudden, like, for years and years and years, they were like, okay, there's these rules. You have to use 00 flour. You have to use 62% hydration, beer yeast. And then some guys, younger guys really, were like, wait a minute. You know, you didn't have 00 flour in the 1850s, and you didn't have commercial yeast. and you're trying to sell
us. Or the 1940s or the 1960s.
Exactly. And so it's like, it's very strange to like, okay, you're selling us this recipe from either like the 1650s or the 1850s is what you're saying with ingredients that like just literally weren't able to be manufactured in those times.
Like the AVPN? And like, you know, they're amazing because I think that they did a wonderful job, again, going back to marketing,
right,
of unifying a group of pizzolos in Naples and saying, hey, you know what? We're the pizza here now isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to get us back to being the land of pizza. So why don't we create these rules to make sure that everyone's following them and they're using really great ingredients.
Right.
And talking to some of these older pizzolos in Naples, they were like, you know, we never used extra virgin olive oil on our pizza. You know, we couldn't afford it. We didn't use Florida latte all the time. We never used bufala mozzarella because it was so much more expensive.
Right.
That was like the special treat. But then all of a sudden you have AVPN coming out and saying like, here are the things that you should follow. You have to have type 00 flour. You have to have. And it brought an economy back because they licensed their brand name, the AVPN, to make sure that the ingredients were consistent.
Right.
And so whether or not it's a positive or negative now, they did want to ensure that their pizza that they were serving there had some type of consistency. And so I think that's an amazing way to market, to go to market with a pizza, but not to say that that's the end all be all. Like, you know.
Right. Well, that's I think where the issues
come in.
And that's
the 80s.
Is, yeah, no, I know. Well, they kind of created a recipe. I mean, when I went back, I was on, you know, I've been in this game for a long time. I've been traveling around Italy for a long time. And it's crazy looking back and being like, I remember a time when they were like, listen, you can't use what you call fresh mozzarella on pizza. That's not even allowed to be called fresh mozzarella. You have to use bufala to make. At that time, they weren't calling it DOC or STG.
DOP.
They were calling it duck.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were saying duck pizza, like all over New York and all over Napoli. And it was just like, you know, and I mean, now I think we live in a really interesting time because you have guys like Carlo Sanmarco and Raffaella Bonetta and Francesco Martucci and Franco Pepi.
Yeah.
And they're really like pushing the boundaries and it's, you know, wait, why can they do that? Oh, well, they're, you know,
well,
they're
like Franco Pepe, he's outside of Naples. He's in Caserta and Caiazzo. And so, like, they have been able, I mean, he comes from a baking family, Franco Pepe, which is, to me, is like a pilgrimage that anyone that loves pizza needs to go there because his pizza is amazing. And he's probably one of the very few pizzolos who actually mixes by hand.
Right.
And so, you know, his pizzas are gorgeous.
But they don't follow any of the rules from the stretching techniques. But it doesn't matter. It's fucking amazing.
But the thing is, too, like, of traveling and going to all these AVPN pizzerias, none of them do. None of them follow every single rule of the AVPN. I mean, now you can have you don't have to have a wood fire because obviously in a lot of cities, even in Italy, you can't put a wood fire oven in certain places.
Yeah.
They don't allow it. Cities don't allow it. So recently they've evolved and said, okay, well, you can do a gas assist. We'll allow it. Or like a fork mixer. Like for a long time, it was like, that was the only way you could mix your dough. Or by hand.
Right.
Nobody mixes by hand anymore. Like, if you're making 200 pizzas a day, good luck.
Yeah. You can't do it. I mean, I've known Anthony Mangieri for a long time, and he's always, like, you know, switching it up. Like, one day he's like, oh, I'm back to the hand mix. And then he's like, oh, I got this diving arm. Fuck, I hate this diving arm. I need a spiral mixer. And, you know, like, it's...
And beautiful pizza. Tony makes amazing pizza.
Always beautiful pizza because there's so much love and care put into it where he's so obsessive that it's just like, it's going to be a great product no matter what.
But it's not just like, it's not hand mixing. That's not what makes it a beautiful pizza. It's everything. It's 100%. The ingredients. It's the guy. It's like what's in his head every day when he walks in to, or her walks in to make their pizza and they've had a great day or a shitty day. They're like, all right, I'm going to shape my dough. I'm balling my dough. I've got my ingredients. I just went out to the market and I found like the best tomatoes, the best basil, like whatever. Here's the cheese, like going to a local cheese producer, that's what I'm going to use.
Right.
You know, it's everything in that person's mind and brain that actually makes that pizza special.
Franco almost like took like kind of like a modernist stand like to pizza. Like I see the pizza, how he builds it, and it's like, you know, with the cheese first and the tomatoes post-baked.
Piping.
I believe, isn't he refining the tomatoes through sieves and doing things like that?
Oh, yeah. His sublegata margarita is amazing. We actually did an homage to him, Francisco did for the book. And it's a beautiful tomato. You know, it's three kinds of tomatoes mixed in the sauce, fresh. And you taste it on, it's just like, I can think about it right now. It's like, it's just such an amazing tomato taste that, you know, it's every time you go there, like, and it's beautiful. And not to mention, it's like €8, which I also find so insane when
that's
I go
crazy.
Back to, when I go to Italy and we're in Campania and you go to like Franco Pepe where they have a sommelier, like it should be a Michelin star restaurant, you know?
Right.
If you go in, it's gorgeous. You have this gorgeous view of the Italy, of the valley. And beautiful interior, you know, the service is amazing. And their pizzas are €8. And you're like, and that's like, what? Like, I mean, it's amazing, but he wants to keep it so that everyone in Caiazzo can come to his pizzeria.
To come and afford it. It's hard to get in there?
It's really hard to get in there. It's hard to get down to it. Like when you get into Caiazzo, there's like a big square, like town square when you get in, which is very typical for these smaller towns in Italy. And basically if you drive, you can't get any closer. Like you can get to this fountain, like we always laugh, it's like you got to park at the fountain and walk. And the streets are really narrow. And even the way to get down to Franco Pepe is basically just like a little sign on the side of the street, just like you would in Italy. It says a street name and you go down and like right there you start seeing people kind of like lined up to get in, and it's this windy little steps, you know, that I think it's only like this wide for you to get through down that kind of side street down to his pizzeria. So if you don't know it's there, you would never know it was there.
Right.
And if you've never been to Caiazzo, you would never know. But, you know, there's the, it's a beautiful town, but he has managed to bring a lot of people to come out to this small town to have an amazing pizza experience.
It seems like that's like a growing trend, like especially in Italy, where I'm like, it's almost like you're seeing the beginnings of these guys chasing a Michelin star, where I've been seeing what Francesco Martucci's been doing, and
Imasinelli.
Yeah. And well, I think he's got a new spot that he's opening now, where he's like running pizzas through an impingement oven.
I was gonna say it's the impinger oven,
like,
which is like
for those who don't know, that's like those conveyor belt ovens at Domino's. That's what an impingement oven is.
And for an Italian to do that, I mean,
crazy.
I remember starting this conversation with like, you know, talking about ovens and talking to other people in the industry, and they were like, oh, "You're gonna try pizza in an impinger oven?" Like,
yeah.
Blasphemy. And you know, we love it. It's amazing. We had a Middleby Marshall as a test, and they were amazing to work with, and it produced amazing oven, amazing pizza, especially if you're doing something like a Detroit style, like a Emmy squared.
Yeah.
They do a impinger, and it's like start to finish.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, I recently got like reintroduced to them. They have a lot of stigma behind them. Like, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I know guys in the Midwest that like, there's this whole like culture around, there's dudes that like, they could take these apart, pizza guys, put them back together. Like, and it's almost like car culture with like these things. Once you get out into the Midwest and you know,
that's
start
like
going
St. Louis,
past,
like the Saints, like Imo's.
Even it starts like, in like Ohio. It starts in Ohio. Ohio's like half and half. It's like half deck ovens, half impingement ovens in locals places. And then once you get west of there, except for Chicago, like, it's just, that's all there is.
Because it's like the Blodgett family, you know, like the Blodgetts were so big in the Midwest and here that, like, right. you know, I mean, like, you're a Mastro fan.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, like, big Mastro
like,
fan.
Talking about, like, oven culture and history and seeing, like, we would go to all these pizzerias and we would be like, oh, yeah, this is where, like, everyone has X type right. of oven because everyone went into like, oh, what? Oh, you're making really good pizza. Oh, what kind of oven do you have? All right, well, let's get that kind of oven in.
Right. Well, yeah, it's like the standard of what's used out there. I think the stigma comes in is like I've yet, besides doing it myself, I've never had a good, like a great pizza out of an impingement oven. And then recently, we were like, let's go try one, and we couldn't find one. We're calling these people and they're like, yo, listen, like Domino's ain't gonna let you in to use their oven. And literally no one had it. We went to this guy, Bo something. He runs, he's got like a 25,000 square foot frozen pizza factory in Long Island called NY Thin Slice. It sells to like BJ's and like a couple other big clients. But we were like, let's see what would happen. And we, you know, obviously used great dough and this and that, and we got some of the most amazing results. I would say it rivals the deck ovens, like the yeah. results we were getting. It was completely insane. And, you know, maybe it's just that, like, you know, I mean, if you're just throwing like a pound of fucking yeast, salt, sugar, and water, and, you know, making a really low hydration dough, sticking it in the fridge, using it the next day.
Not proofing.
And that's what you're putting on the impingement ovens. Maybe that's why we think it's, you know, not so great.
Yeah, it's all about making of the pizza, you know, like it's all of the different equipment is fine. Like you can have the very best just for anything that you're making, even sure. at home, you have the very best, but if you don't know how to use it, and if you're putting not quality into the making of whatever it is, then yeah, I mean, the results are going to be subpar.
No, 100%. So what are what else is in this book? I saw Mastro. I saw a bunch of things. We have like a little, you know, like kind of brochure sneak preview of this thing. I can't tell you what's inside. No, we'll talk about it a little bit though. But what's kind of covered?
You can't
in
open
here?
It.
Oh, I'm not allowed to open it.
I'm just kidding.
Oh my god. This thing is like, it's like dealing with like a sacred text right now. Like every time I look at it, I'm like, am I allowed
I'm actually
to be in the presence of this?
Every time you open.
It's crazy, but so it's a 3-volume book and you have recipes, techniques, history, and fundamentals.
Mm-hmm. And then a kitchen manual like we do with all the other books.
And then the kitchen manual that goes with all the books. So is this like, obviously you want to be able to show the home chef, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm saying what to do, but is, do you also cover like a lot of the things that like the professional pizza chef, like, or the,
yes,
needs
the
to
pizzolo.
Know?
I mean, it's whatever you want to learn. So if you want to learn more about hydration and dough and the different types of, you know, what's a pouliche, what's a levain, you know, all these things that you can use to make your dough. Sure. I mean, that's all there. There's also information about just key ingredients. Mm-hmm. So flour, water, yeast, salt, but then also sugar and oils, fats, salt, you know, all of those things are talked about from a heat and energy principle as well, just like we did for bread, a little narrower because we're just talking about pizza ovens
right.
for the most part. But still, you know, how your hot spots work in your home oven versus in your deck oven versus your wood fire oven. You know, there's all these different principles that are applied to all of the types of ovens that can help you make a better pizza.
Right. I've been really recently, I've been like, it's been popping up all over my Facebook, a variety of companies that are selling these, they're pretty much pizza steels, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? But Meissen has one coming out and like a few other companies, and they're not even selling it as a pizza steel. Mm-hmm. They're selling it as like an addition to your home oven, because if you stick that in your home oven, and even if you're cooking a turkey, it's correcting temperature fluctuations.
I never
a lot.
Take my baking steel out of my oven.
Right.
In fact, for some things, I have two baking steels where I'm cooking in between the two heat sources.
That's exactly what they're pushing.
It's amazing.
It's crazy.
We talk about that in the
you
book.
You talk about that in the book a lot.
Yeah.
So what? I saw San Paolo in here. I know nothing about San Paolo pizza. What the hell is that?
So we went to South America. One, because from a historical perspective, a lot of people aren't aware that when a lot of Italians immigrated in the late 1800s to early 1900s, they went not only to the States, but they also went to South America.
Yeah.
And so both Sao Paulo and Buenos Aires both have very strong pizza cultures with pizzerias also that are ancestral to the same time as when
the
we
ones
think
in
the
New
ones
York,
here
yeah.
in the city and everywhere else. So it was really interesting. They like a lot of cheese. Mm-hmm. There's also some interesting things too, like pizza is only eaten at dinner. At lunchtime, pizzerias are not open. You go in and the pizzerias are served to you with a knife and fork. So it's very, white tablecloth,
okay,
knife and fork, sit down dinner. It's very popular on Sunday. So it's kind of like the Sunday meal for Italians and now Sao Paulinistas. Yeah, that's what they say.
Paulinistas.
I know the name. They have a special name. So yeah, it's really interesting. But then there's also, really big football culture, soccer culture around
sure.
pizza.
Yeah.
Huge down there. They also love a lot of cheese.
What kind of cheeses do they use?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I just remember.
Is it like a thick pie or?
I think there's one.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get to see. We're opening the sacred text, everybody.
I think there's one.
Turn on your YouTube video right now. The sacred text is open.
No, I don't think there's a picture of it in Sao Paulo. But yeah, I mean, there's super thin crusts.
Really, really thin.
Like cracker thin.
Okay.
We actually have a recipe in the book for Brazilian style thin crust pizza, which is rolled.
Rolled with a rolling pan.
Yes.
Super thin crust.
Super thin.
Is it in a wood fired oven?
So, yes.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
But they're old. They kind of have to be
at some
point.
A lot of them are.
Yeah, it's kind of a mix.
Like the older ancestral ones, yes.
Right.
But then they also use, there's like faina, which is like a chickpea, dough that they put on top of the pizza slices. So they call it, a caballo, which is on horseback. But it's faina, which if you're in Sicily, there's something called, I don't think it's called fainetta. I think
okay.
I was actually talking to Frank Pinello about this, a couple days ago.
Right.
But it's a very well-known, like, something you would get at a bakery.
Okay.
But they put it on top of the slice of pizza. So it's a chickpea flavored slice on top of your slice of pizza.
That's kind of crazy.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, who's to say it's right or wrong?
Did you guys do Argentina at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know OG Papa Fern. I'm sure you're. Have you ever? You don't
no.
know OG Papa Fern?
Do not.
Oh my God! You got to meet OG Papa Fern. So OG Papa Fern is his family had a pizzeria in Argentina, and mm-hmm. he does Argentinian pizza. He, came over the house and made it a few times. Like I had never had it. It was pretty cracked out. Like it was really, really, really good. We were using like. We used a traditional pan to make it, but it's a thick
yes.
crust. It's round.
The El Molde is what they call it.
Yeah, it's got tons thick. Of cheese.
That's the one that I'm talking about. Like
yeah.
The cheese, and then did he put the mayonnaise on top?
He didn't put the mayonnaise. He makes, there's three of them that he makes. One's like a ham and olive. Another one has sauce.
So with the olives.
Green olives.
And they weren't pitted, right? They were whole.
Yeah.
Which
exactly.
is so weird.
Yeah,
and
exactly. You gotta pit the olive
and
as
they
you're
roll off
it.
Your pizza.
Yep, it's pretty wild. OG is he's definitely been trying to. I think he works at a school as like mm-hmm. a day job, but he's been doing it since he's a kid. And he does pop ups here and there. He's a really cool guy. But I was like, it almost reminded me the way that he made it. It mm-hmm. almost reminded me of like a really good Detroit style pizza.
So it's really funny that you say this because the El Molde pizza, we have a recipe for El Molde, how
right.
to make it. It has a little bit of cake flour in it, mm-hmm. Which is different than a Detroit style pizza and it's round. But if you go to Chicago, so you have the Chicago Deep Dish World,
sure.
like a Uno's pizzeria, but then you also have Bert Katz, Bert's Place, who's like Pequod's, which is a lot like the El Molde Argentinian pizza dough.
Is that like the cast iron pie? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Something like that.
And it's round.
Right.
But it's thicker. It's like, it's kind of like white bread, you know? It's like a thicker, airy, a little airier than the Detroit, I think. Like, or actually like denser, I would say. But yeah, they're so similar. In fact, we talk about that in the book of how, like, who knew that this Argentinian style would be so similar to this kind of Chicago style?
Right. No, 100%. Like, the more and more I travel around, it's like you see these styles of pizza all around America. But now that I've been looking at Italy, it's like, have you had that, like, thin crust Roman in Rome that's, like, everywhere? Like, it's much more popular than Pizza Italia.
Yeah,
as far as the number of places, no?
Yeah, Legata Mangione. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's in Rome.
I haven't.
It's amazing. They've been around for a long time. It's wood fire oven. What they say is, like, it's a little crispier. That's what it's like. Stefano Caligari as well. He's really well known for the cacio pepe pizza at Spunk.
The guy who puts the ice cubes on it.
Went and saw that. That was awesome. Beautiful, beautiful pizza. But yeah, so that's kind of the precursor to having Altaglio, which is another Roman pizza. Like, if you say Roman pizza, what's in your head? Like,
I mean, now it's different. Well, what originally popped up first was Metro.
Yeah.
So back in the day, going back to, you know, I don't know, I was probably 21 years old. So I don't know, 15 years ago, there was a guy, Salvatore Olivella, who claimed to be from Naples, but I didn't know how to slap, didn't know how to do any of that. We didn't even know what that was back then. Like, we had no idea. Yeah, we had no idea about any of this stuff until, like, Giulio and Roberto Caparuccio came out on the scene, and then, like, that started to, like, proliferate. But he had opened a place that's still there called Numero Vendotto, number 28, mm-hmm. in the West Village, right next to Ketste. And they were like, oh, yeah, this is what we do in Naples. And they taught me, like, they were like, here, you got to do it like a violin. And it's the pizza Metro style. And we were cooking it in the wood fired oven. And we'd either have, like, one. Yeah, it was long.
A beater.
Yes. And they would say, like, they would tell me these stories. Like, they'd be like, oh, in Rome, you buy pizza by the kilo. And this is what they have. And blah, 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 blah. So originally, that was it. And then, I mean, we only started seeing Pizza Altaglio, I don't know, what, 5 or 6 years ago for the first time? Like,
yeah, Bonci. Like, as soon as Gabriella Bonci, kind of also a baker, started making pizza and Pizzerium opened, and then it was, like, rave reviews for pizza in Rome. Like, that's what people equate to for Roman-style pizza. Most people, when I ask
them, that, like, the
Roman?
First one that was doing Italio?
No,
it wasn't. Somebody else was doing it.
So there's this guy, lesser known outside of Italy, Iezzi is his last name, and Bonci
Angelo?
Actually... Angelo Iezzi. So he actually started with high hydration doughs, and so even Bonci, if you talk to him, he credits Iezzi as an inspiration for making his.
Right.
But again, it's a baker that started making these Altaglio pizzas. We talk about it in the book. There's a little bit of a differentiation where Iezzi actually keeps the toppings and warms them up all together, where Bonci actually takes the toppings off, warms the base, and then puts the toppings back on.
Okay.
So there's kind of two schools of thought, but the base is very similar. You know, it's par-baked and then topped and beautiful. Both of them have strengths. But yeah, so, like, nobody knows about this Iezzi guy. Like, I had read about him.
We know about him. He's in, like, the API or something like that.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. But, like, a lot of people don't. Like, everyone's like, oh, Gabriella Bonci, like, he's the first one. And it's like, no. Like, there's been pizza in Rome for a long time.
So when is Angelo from, you think? Like, the 70s, 80s, 90s?
So he started his school around the 80s.
Okay. And he was teaching Roman style. I know that's his main jam, is teaching Roman style.
It was about the same
pizza.
Time as AVPN. Like, that's the kind of continuum. It's like they both started, AVPN kind of started and API kind of started at the same time.
Right.
But yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. It's,
and Iezzi's like, too, like, Bonci is really close to the Vatican.
Okay.
So, of course, for, like, Trista's exposure, like he's right there in the main drag, where Ayezi is like out in a neighborhood. So you have to go out there. Same with Stefano Caligari, like his places are not quite like right in the city. Trapezino, I think, is like the closest one that's in the city.
And that's the same Trapezino
that was here, yeah,
in the Lower East Side.
Exactly.
It closed down, right?
I think so. Yeah, I don't think the top one's here anymore.
Right. But that place was great. I just think
it's like little sandwiches.
Bro, it was so fucking good. I'm like a Lower East Side stomping ground kid. And, you know, the problem was, is people just didn't get it.
What's like pizza fritta? Like, the only person that makes pizza fritta here in New York is Roberto at Keste.
And they don't make a lot.
No, and every time I come to see him, he's like, oh, you have to have pizza fritta, which I love because the only time I really get it is when I'm in Naples, where it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But, like, why? Like, why? Like, we eat funnel cakes at the fair every day.
I know
day.
Exactly why. It's because these guys are terrible at communicating their message to Americans. Like, they really, like, I mean, Gino Cervillo, who's, bro, mm-hmm. I mean, the guy's got 3 million followers on Instagram.
He's on Via Tribunale.
He's a fucking legend. He's got all these places. He, you know, fought the mafia and all this other crazy shit. You know, whatever, whatever, bro. The guy's huge. And he tried to open up
on Bowery.
Right
there.
He opened on Bowery, no, but he opened at the same time when they were building that. He had opened a place on Mulberry Street across from Chich's old spot. And they were doing, I think, they were definitely doing pizza frites. And they were doing, like, I think maybe they were doing Portfolio too, or maybe it was just pizza frites in Montanera. And it just, you know, fell on its face.
Because no one knows what it is.
Because no
like pizza
one
portfolio?
Knows what it is. Bro, if you fold even an Italian-American, even like a person, if you went to, okay, so the Fortunato family that owns Fortunato Bakery, right? They've been in America since like 1974. They go back to Italy all the time, right? But like they're not from the city of Naples. They're from Campania. And they're very talented. But if I went up to Mike Fortunato, who's born and raised in Italy, but has been here since 1974, and took a pizza and folded it in half, and then folded it in half again.
You have to have the paper, though, Nino.
You got to have the paper. I get it. But if I did that, he would be mortified. And like, but then if I showed him a video in Naples of all these people doing it, he'd be like, oh, this is a traditional Italian thing. Of course you do this. But if I didn't, like, combine the reference with him, he would be absolutely mortified. He'd be fucking smacking me in the back of the neck like, what are you doing? What is this blasphemy?
But it's also like New Yorkers. Like, if you walked around the street with your pizza portfolio, not a slice, a pizza portfolio, and you're walking around eating it like most people do in Naples, you would get tons of looks. Where if you're out there eating a slice like nobody's business, that's fine.
I think I actually talked about this on the podcast with Fred.
Oh, really?
Where it's like I think what you need is like an infographic, like on all around the thing, where it shows like a pizza and a slice, and then it shows somebody folding the slice in half, and it shows you fold in the portfolio in half. And then you just have TVs with videos from Naples of people walking around the streets. And that's like the only way they would get it.
Well,
it,
we actually talk about, we have like the world of pizza is one of the chapters in the book. And so we talk about all of these things. And going back and forth to Italy too, we would ask like Neapolitans, like, oh, like pizza's in the name, like pizza al campo franco or pizza rustica.
Right.
Is that pizza? No. That's not pizza, but the pizza's in the name, or pizza fritta. No, the pizza's in the name, but it's not pizza. And you would buy that at a bakery, but you would never buy that. Like, you would never find pizza alla campo franco at a pizzeria. It's always a bakery.
Tell everybody what pizza alla campo franco is.
It's like a deep dish pizza.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that I think find hysterical is like Italians are like, oh, pizza in Chicago, no way. And then you're like, but you have pizza alla campo franco. Like, that's a deep dish pizza. Same with pizza rustica.
Right.
Pizza in the name. And it's a pie, and it's a thick pie filled with meats and eggs and cheese, whole eggs, actually. And they're like, well, we just serve that during Easter. No, like, it's still, like, it's a dish.
Right.
And it's an Italian dish, and it's a Chicago deep dish pizza.
Sure. I am. I don't think Chicago makes pizza, but that's just me. I'm not God. You know, I have. We also have Hawaiian pizza in here too.
Oh my God! So I had to tell you that.
Jesus! Oh, I don't know. I don't know if we could do that. I might have to black that page out.
You can turn it quickly. But again, like pizza, whatever you want to do, like that's what we're here for.
I get it. I'm a little fucking militant. It doesn't mean I'm fucking right about everything. You know what I'm saying? I'm just a guy who's like, my view on the thing is, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm obviously, I think, you know, pizza was invented in Italy, but perfected in Brooklyn, New York City, where they paint the walls with Biggie. These are fucking facts, all right? If you want to fucking go outside or you want to fight about it, we can do that all fucking day.
Well, but, you know, we wrote a book in Seattle, so I'm sure that's going to be, you know,
a
topic of conversation.
Somebody's going to say something. Everybody always has something to say. But, no, I don't mind if, I don't care if people put pineapple on pizza. I just try to talk to people about, like, I'm like, listen, man, like, if you're, like, look with Tony Bologna. You know Tony Bologna?
But do it right. Like,
just do it right.
That's the big thing.
And do it right. And you know, if you're going to do a bunch of crazy pies, just do them nice. Like, I walk into people's places who, you know, obviously they're in the game. I respect them. They respect me. And I just, like, I look at their counter and they have this, like, out of the jar.
Giant, industry size.
Buffalo chicken or barbecue chicken, like barbecue sauce out of like a Restaurant Depot thing. And they're just dumping it on with this dry, disgusting. And I'm like, why is that in your window? And they're like, oh, the people like it. And I'm like, if the people like it so much, why are you making only half pies? Like, have you ever looked at your numbers and it's just like, listen, you know, do whatever you want. It's your business. But I'm telling you straight out, you have that on your counter and you have a chicken Caesar salad wrap from the 90s. Like, nobody's going to write stories about you. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is just the way it is.
No,
like,
when I was in Copenhagen and I went to this place, it's called Gorm's. He has a couple pizzerias up there in Scandinavia. I think he's also in Norway and in Sweden. But he did this beautiful pineapple carpaccio.
Carpaccio? So,
yes.
What the hell does that even mean?
So raw pineapple is sliced super thin.
Okay.
And put on the pizza. So it's just like a really light layer with the sweetness. And then he had a Calabrian, like spicy. I love it spicy. So like a spicy chili oil on top with flor de latte.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah.
It was delicious. But it was the way he did it. Like, it was not giant chunks of pineapple juicing up all over the place, pooling on top. Like, you know, when I was a kid, we went to this place called Mountain Mike's, and it was like the Shakey's pizza.
I've never been to Shakey's. Shaylin talks about it all the fucking time.
I know, because she's a West Coast kid too. And they had pineapple pizza. Oh, they had Hawaiian pizza with Canadian bacon and the chunks of pineapple. And still to this day, like, I think that's what I think of, like, the original, you know, like, early Hawaiian pizza, which I would never eat because it's just, like, the balance isn't there. But if you make a beautiful pie with a balance of the sweet and the salty and the spice, oh, with anything, like, that's amazing.
What if you did a pineapple sauce?
Yeah, a puree. Like, we do so the chef team created a strawberry marinara.
Ooh.
So you have the acidity of the strawberry instead of the tomato. And so, like, now, this time of the season of strawberries.
Right.
But it's fresh, you know, it's got that, it looks like a marinara, you know, it has that red coloring. So until you bite into it and you get the sweetness of the strawberries with like burrata.
I actually just
had this
at a restaurant.
Or mascarpone. Yes,
somebody put this guy Rocco, forgive me Rocco for not remembering the name of your restaurant, but it was incredible. It was in Astoria right next to where my boy DJ Fusco is opening up. And this guy was bringing out like fish carpaccio with like these frozen frog waffle flakes on it and all kinds of crazy stuff. But he brought out a tomato and strawberry, you know, kind of like salad thing. And it was incredible. And we were like, yeah, well, let's just throw this on pizza. And that's exactly what we did. And we were like,
a little balsamic.
It was amazing. And then it wasn't like, you know, they kind of mesh together. I really enjoy, I had it at my buddy Kyle O'Brien's place, Hotel Chantel, years ago, where they did tomato watermelon and basil. Mm. And like, so it's one of the best summer dishes I ever had in my life. I don't know if it would work on pizza because watermelon's got a lot of water, but.
But if you strained it, you know, if you pureed it down
exactly.
And let it, you know.
And did all that and just captured those flavors, I think that's exactly what you need. Do you guys do a lot of, do you guys do anything with like talking about like refining ingredients to add to pizza in this book? Or is it kind of like just sticking to what, you know, you guys were learning and trying to relay that information?
So there are... there's information both in the kitchen manual and in the book on techniques that are typical techniques like sauteing, frying, you know, all the things that you might do for different types of ingredients to make sure that you're looking at the water relation to putting on cheese. There's a chapter just on cheese. There's a chapter just on sauces, which are tomato based, pestos, dairy based, et cetera.
Right.
So we do talk kind of about like water content and all of that.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys in the industry, I mean, thank you very much for my beautiful wedding gift that's over there. I got the original modernist book, and there's just so many things that I think like a lot of guys that I know and definitely me like didn't realize. And like through exploring that book and exploring those techniques, there's so many things that you can kind of apply to the pizza making trade where, and it, you know, for some guys, it seems like that's where they're going. Didn't like Massimo hire like a big pastry chef? And I know now a lot of these restaurants that are open
now. Well, he has gelato now.
Huh?
He has gelato now, which is amazing.
He has gelato now. I saw a guy making bread in there. Mm-hmm. I got to go visit him. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like stuck in a Brooklyn state.
Yeah, they've got a bread oven there now. Bread deck oven.
A bread deck oven? Mm-hmm. Do you know what kind?
No, I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
I'm so excited to make. Well, they're making sandwiches on Wednesdays now.
I know. It's amazing. Well, I think
Lindustry. That's such an amazing place.
I think.
And Massimo's amazing.
Yeah, no, Massimo's a man. I think that's where the industry's going, though, because, I mean, labor costs are insane, and it's literally like, you know, we went from like $15 an hour, and in less than 4 years, I mean, you can't hire a guy for less than 25, and it's not just New York. It's I'm seeing
it's
this
Seattle
all around
too.
the country.
Everywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, people are going to, you know, you have a mixer, you have a walk-in fridge, you have an oven. Like, people are going to start out and have to add artisanal bread programs to the thing. And it's, you know, I mean, there's a guy down the block from me over here. He's a French guy, used to be a baker, or used to be a banker. Mm. Got sick of the banking industry and then became a baker.
He just kicked the inn out, and now he's a baker.
Bro, this guy, I'm pretty sure he's doing like 300-400 loaves a day, all retail, and mm-hmm. he's selling for like $12 a loaf.
Well, Dan Richer from Raza in Jersey City, one of my favorite dishes, right now he's just doing pizzas, it's not on the menu right now, but is his bread and butter, which when I would tell people, oh, I'm going to Dan's, I'm going to have the bread and butter, they're like, you're going to a pizzeria, like you're ordering bread before pizza?
Yeah.
But he makes the most amazing bread. It's just like fermentation. You know, he makes his own butter, and it's this cultured, beautiful tang to the butter with the bread. And it's amazing. And yeah, I'll eat bread and butter before I eat pizza. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, no, 100%.
If it's really good, sure.
Have you ever heard of James Trees in Vegas? Esther's Kitchen? So James Trees, it's one of the most incredible Italian restaurants I've ever been to in my life. It's in the Arts District.
Smaller than the old Lindustry?
No. No, it's not small. No, it's a good sized place. But he really took off in Vegas, James Trees. He like cut his bones in LA and then originally was from East Vegas. But the whole Caputo crew, we always go over there when we're in Vegas. It's right next to Vinnie Rotolo's place. But he does, on the menu, you buy the bread, right? And it comes with, you know, this little anchovy paste, and it also comes with like a butter, and it comes with like some other sauce. But it's like $8 for the bread that is homemade there. And like, I heard a lot of people like grumbling, like they were like, wait, who the fuck are they charging me for the bread? What are they doing over here? But then you have it, and it's just like, it sounds like a similar thing to what you're talking about. So I want to look. We only have a couple minutes left. Oh, so did you guys have Sficcioni at all?
So we have We have a recipe in the book for spincione.
Right.
We also have a recipe in the book for focaccia, even though focaccia wouldn't be considered pizza.
I think it's fucking pizza.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love focaccia. And also, you can use it as a base for pizza. So, you know, why not? It's similar to a lot of the other thick crust or thick breads like a Detroit, like a Sicilian or square, whatever you want to call it.
Did you ever find like connections between like New York style Sicilian pizza and Detroit, like going back to the sfaccione? Because that's kind of the story I always heard was like, so if you go to L&B Spumoni Gardens,
which we did,
right? It besides, you know, obviously it has mozzarella sauce and whatever, but it looks very much like a sfaccione. You know what I'm saying? It's like you could kind of see that's where it came from. And I know for a pretty sure, you guys can fact check me on this. You have supercomputers in your pockets. But, you know, the story behind the Detroit-style pizza, the guy was Sicilian. He used his mother's sfaccione recipe to develop the dough is what I heard. Okay, you're looking at me like I'm crazy. I don't know. Maybe
I'm looking
I'm
at
wrong.
You like you're crazy because you are crazy, but that's why I'm here.
Am crazy.
But I mean, there's really the sfaccione. We really didn't find any lineage to anything here.
Okay.
Directly.
Yeah.
So, but we do think that it is a style of bakery type product.
100%.
In Sicily, you wouldn't find it at a pizzeria. You would find it at a bakery. It's served cold.
Yes.
It's not heated up.
Yes.
Like Al Taglio. So there are very big differences.
It's definitely not pizza, but I think that, you know, these Sicilian immigrants, you know, L&B Spumoni Gardens are Sicilian, and they were like, oh, there's this pizza thing going on, and we could throw mozzarella and this on that. They actually, if you go to really old school spots in New York, a lot of them will have, you've never heard of these places. They like live in like Middle Village and Forest Hills and stuff like that. You would never find these places unless you were like really looking for it, but you'd never find them in a magazine. But they do, it's called Grandpa Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially, it's sfaccione. It's they're not using caciocavallo or primo sale cheese. They're using mozzarella, but it's got the breadcrumbs and the anchovies and the red onions and this and that. It's pizza.
It's like
journey.
A pizza rosa and a pizza bianco out of Roscioli in Rome.
Right.
It's like, you know, is that pizza? What?
Yeah.
Like, it's bread with something on top.
Sure. So,
and it's sold in a bakery.
I think.
Not a pizzeria.
I think it's all fucking pizza.
I think it's all delicious.
It's all
That's
delicious.
That's all I care about.
Yeah, why is it? All right, fuck it. It's not pizza. It's pizza, but it's pizza bianco. All right, we got to get the fuck out of here. I'm sorry it took so short this time, but Stephanie, you are the shit. Everybody, I know you're drooling right now. Give me a camera right there. Modernist Pizza. I got the sacred text. I cannot take any of your phone calls. I cannot tell you the recipes or what's inside. But in October this year, we're going to get it. In the meantime, shout out to the team at Modernist Cuisine. They are the fucking shiznick. And go order Modernist Bread and Modernist Cuisine's original book and Modernist at Home. Not a paid sponsor. They are amazing
just
things.
Just a lover.
They will change your life. They change
just
your life.
Just a lover, not
life.
A fighter.
I'm out there. I'm spreading the gospel. I'm spreading the good news.
Thank you.
We got Modernist Pizza coming out. All right. We'll see you all later. Thanks for joining in. Bye-bye.
All right, dude.
Let's go.
That was awesome.
That was cool.
Did you have fun?
I had a good time.